Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors, Macabre Manor of Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I'm Jody.
And I'm James, and I knew you were going to do that, you bastard. Ha ha!
I figured you would.
Speaking of bastards, can I get my beer first again?
Yes.
Not just because I called Jody a bastard, as we're playing our latest 5th edition and 5e D&D game, and I've, we got my Sam, who's both our friend, but he's also a cousin of mine, and Jenny, we're like a little troop of halflings, like a little Shire clan, and thought I would pull out, because I ran out of dragon's milk, one of my homebrews, which I think I have mentioned, but it's an arrogant clone bastard using a different cousin, Ike, his homegrown hops, that's called Clan of Bastards.
Awesome.
Yeah, nice. I actually don't remember the ABV. I think between 7 and 8.
Okay.
But just poured myself a nice little bomber. Should have maybe add a little bit more sugar before I bottle, because it's a little flat, but it's not bad. That's what I'm having.
I'm having Captain Morgan Parrot Bay Coconut Rum.
Well, that kind of fits, being a pirate and all.
Yeah.
I want to buy a parrot just so I can teach it to say, I miss my arms. I want to hug my kids one more time, and don't piss off a witch. Yeah, we both know ours are good. We've had both of these. Dungeons and Dragons, 50th anniversary. Started in 1974, and of course it's 2024. We've done several episodes leading up to this, including last year's Our Favorite Thing. These are a few of our favorite things. And this year, we've started putting out actual historical, this is what happens, and this is what they did, and this is where they're going. And this episode, finally, 1974, published!
Yay!
Woo! Under the full name of Dungeons and Dragons Rules for Fantastic Medieval War Games Campaigns Playable with Paper and Pencil and Miniature Figures.
Yes.
That's a name.
Yes, it is.
Doesn't quite roll off the tongue like D&D. What would it be? D&D, RFN, WC, PPP, MIM, F, Gary Gygax, Dave Arneson, and came. I mean, I've got more things, but I'm just going to jump in here and say came in a small little box set, little wooden thing with 3 booklets, Men of Magic, Monsters and Treasure, Underworld and Wilderness Adventure.
Cool.
Had 3 alignments, Lawful, Neutral, and Chaotic, much like the Beckme kind of set from the 80s and 90s, and instead of the whole Cartesian plane.
Yeah. That came from something specific.
What was it? Well, I'm going to keep going for a brief second, and when you know, just jump in.
Okay. I've got it. Paul Anderson. Paul Anderson's novels, specifically 3 Hearts and 3 Lions. That is where the character alignment system originally came from.
What kind of bullshit is it that I read like a billion books and no one fucking person? That's cool. I have never read that. I don't know if I know that author.
Well, I'm sure you do. I think it's pronounced Paul. Maybe it's Paul. It's P-O-U-L. You've had to have seen that. I've been seeing his books. I've never read any of his stuff, but I've seen his books all over the place.
I may have seen it, but doesn't mean I, yeah.
Well, he was also one of the authors that was published in stuff like Weird Tales, but he was born after Weird Tales started publication. Anyway, go on and I'll see if I can. I know I've seen some of his novels in the store, in the bookstores.
Yeah, so that's where the alignments come from. Good to know. So if either of us read that book, we could know more, but we don't.
Yeah, I've never read it.
But started with three classes, fighting man. Instead of fighter and magic user and cleric, who of course we mentioned, especially the cleric last episode, but also talked about magic users, and had four races: human, dwarf, elf, and hobbit. Yes,
Hobbit.
you heard me right. Started with hobbit, and we all know them now as our dear beloved halflings, and somewhere in my multitude of pages, we'll eventually get to when they were not called hobbits. we didn't really. When we got to this point, I just told Jody I have years, so jump in when you want. But the next thing I was going to talk about was some of the artwork.
Okay, well, but before you do, so Paul, I'm thinking it's Paul Anderson, his novel Three Hearts and Three Lions, that gave the alignment system, the troll, because this was kind of a fantasy book, the troll is where the trolls in D&D come from because the body regenerates, healing itself.
Oh, no, that I knew, but I didn't know that was him. I just, yeah.
Apparently the Swan Maid and the Nixie were things that were also in the book that influenced the way they were in the game and inspired the Paladin character class later on.
Which we'll get to, I think, in 1975.
Okay.
If not, 1976. Yep, 1975. I see it right there.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Hot dog. I mean, historical things, of course, influence them too. But yeah, that's neat to know that that was a direct influence. Neat. I guess, I mean, of course, before I get to artwork, Men in Magic talks about the classes and the races and the alignments and how you create a character, and this is what you do, and here's how you make it, and this is what your abilities are. Can you fight well, or here are your spells, and here you can heal, and so it's like the player's handbook.
Yeah.
And Monsters and Treasure, of course. Monsters.
That
Monster.
would that kind of make that book more of like the Dungeon Master's Guide? Because, well, I know, later on monsters would be published separate in their own book. The treasure stuff, that's Dungeon Master stuff.
Yeah, so the monsters is kind of like the monster manual, but the treasure would come from the Dungeon Master's Guide. And yeah, oh man, I tell you, when I first started playing D&D and I got the first edition, I'm going through and they have swords that are actually intelligent, and they have these special magic items that are unique and ultra powerful. And they start here. They didn't start late. Like, I'm reading through the, I've got a couple of these, and I printed off PDFs of the others of the these three, and the three or four we'll get to later.
Okay.
And I'm like, holy shit, wow, they started this crap right away. Awesome.
So would this be what they considered zero edition?
I guess so.
Well, I the reason I ask, because there was a database with a bunch of these PDFs. And not just D&D, there was a database with a shit ton of role-playing game PDFs. I won't
Was
say
there? I
what it was
certainly never
called.
visited that website and certainly never downloaded a shit ton of things.
They had D&D broken out into editions, and they had basic, but they also had what they called zero edition. So I let
Oh,
me
no,
look that up.
I always saw it. D&D white box, like that was the original. They called it the white box, and then they, yeah. But so I don't know.
I will let you know.
Cool.
Carry on.
It's a good British movie series. Anyway, yeah. And then Underworld Wilderness Adventures talks about how you can create dungeons for delving and wildernesses with the hexagonal things to go through and beat up green dragons instead of red, because they live in the woods instead of and dungeons, whatever,
Okay.
But yeah, those were the supplements were how to create your characters and how to create the world and how to interact and what the rules are. And that you roll this die for your hit points, you roll this die to hit and give you the rules. If you're a fighting man, you can fight this well. And if you're a cleric, you can't fight that well, but you can fight a little bit, but you have these spells. And if you're a mage, you can't fight with a ship. You have these spells. Ooh. So if you play D&D, it is the same thing, except these rules were more complicated, and I can see why it didn't take them uber long to make them a little more streamlined and easier.
Okay.
But yeah, oh no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, okay. So maybe it's not zero edition, maybe it's just original D&D is what they called it.
Could see that. Means when they make the new edition here in a year or two, they can call it zero if they want.
Right.
I hope they don't, because that just seems like a weird name, but whatever. All right, artwork.
Artwork.
Yeah, I could go into more detail on what's in the supplements, but they're D&D things. It's how you play D&D. If you want to learn how to play in this edition, the zero with or the original or the white box or whatever, download them. You can easily find them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They should be available on Drive Through RPG, I think. W Wizards of the Coast, because when they bought TSR, they bought the rights to all this stuff. And at one point, they made all this stuff available on their website. It's not anymore, but they've got a deal with Drive-Thru RPG, so you can find all this stuff. You have to pay a little bit for it, but
So yeah, if you want to do that, so but we're here more for the history and the neat, cool things. If you want to play the game, tell you what, if
yeah.
any of you want to play the original and you want to record it with us as a podcast, or just not record it and just play with us, I'd be down with that.
Yeah.
But artwork, neat things.
Neat
The
things.
neat, yeah. The artwork was done by friends and family because they had almost no budget for artwork. when they, as the episode we mentioned, when they took the $3,000, they barely had enough money to even get this first set of them done.
But you know, this is the artwork that I like the most.
Do you?
Yeah.
You're high. I like it. It's neat, but it's extremely, it's right at the borderline of amateur and professional. Never
Maybe that's
mind,
why I like it.
you just explained why you like it. So yes, it's fun. It's neat. Like if I would have bought it back in 1974, I would have been amazed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's done, for example, by Cookie Corey, the wife of LGTSA member Bill Corey, and Gary's wife Mary, her half sister Keenan Powell also did some. Keenan quoted, "I remember sitting in a library looking at illustrations and photographs of eagles and horses in order to inspire her hippogriff." They would do pencil drawings so they could trace it over with the pen for printing because the pencils weren't thick enough. They had to do the pen to make it deep enough to actually copy, leading to the look they had in the first edition of the game,
Yeah.
which, Joey's kind of talking about. Greg Bell was another artist on there, and he was a teen at the time, as teenager, and at the time, they would swipe a lot. For example, Greg did art swipes of Jim Steranko's Strange Tales number 167. If you do a comparison of the artwork of this original edition with Strange Tales 167, you will see quite a few overlaps. But he did it well, and it looks nice. Dave Arneson did some. He supplied the first purple worm.
Yeah, purple worm.
Not a euphemism.
Yeah.
Know the difference between pink and purple?
No, what is it?
The grip.
Yeah.
So, the werewolf face is kind of the most heart-wrenching, warming story because it was drawn by Gary's childhood friend, Tom Keogh, who had died young, and Gary took that drawing because they love to hang out and play games together.
Cool. That's really cool.
Next note, here we go. Our budget was nearly non-existent. I am impressed for what they finished with, what they accomplished with almost no money.
Yeah.
And as Jody said, he loves this stuff. Artwork is really important to RPGs. It lets you see the things, even if you put things in with your own imagination. The artwork really helps bring it together. So yeah, when you see the dragon and the purple worm and the harpy and the naughty witch.
I was scrolling through the Men and Magic book, and on page 27 there's a beautiful witch who is very curvy, and an Amazon who is topless.
There are boobs? No.
Yeah, that's something they got in trouble for.
Well, I didn't think about it when I was a teenager, even in my 20s, and now I do understand it being problematic the way they drew the women back in the day,
Yeah.
but yeah.
I will also I do want to say something though, because I'm looking through these, and like I said, these have since been put out as PDFs by Wizards of the Coast. The artwork on the covers, I think, is newer artwork because it's still black and white, but it looks like it's much higher quality than the artwork that's actually in the books.
You can find the originals for free if you look hard enough.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you should steal it, but if you want the original. Well, you know what? Download the originals for free from someplace like whatever. I'm not gonna Google it. If you can't figure it out, I don't know how you're listening to a podcast.
Right.
But you but then go and drive through RPG and buy a copy for cheap, and then you've done your intelligence.
Yeah.
And going with maps are important too, where Gary and Dave McGarry showed some of their work in various publications, supplements, and fanzines, showing how to put the maps together.
Cool.
So anyway, as they're doing this, so that's just sort of some background. That's what's in the supplements, and the artwork's cool. 1974, of course, it's published, but by February, the third booklet had been printed, so they had everything ready to go for their first 1,000 boxes. All the money went to the printer, so they had to sell D&D boxes to recoup the money and a little more. It cost $3 to put the boxes together. They sold them for $10, but then after the distributors got their money, they ended up with about $3 profit for each box sold.
So about what it costs to put it together.
Well, they recouped that
Oh,
and
okay.
an additional three profit.
Oh, three profit. Okay.
So not bad. And they when they finished, I've got a few more 1974 things, but they finished 74 with 400, about 400 of their original 1,000 still in stock.
Okay.
They tried to help supplement their bottom line by purchasing back some of their Gwydion games that they'd sold as in some back stock. And they also got a new infusion of money from one of the Blooms in order to publish one of his naval warfare games. And talked about Brian Bloom in the last episode.
Okay.
But then they were coming up with more ideas to make more money, and they thought they could come up with supplements to add to this, such as the first one, Greyhawk, that we'll talk about 1975, because that's when it comes out.
Yeah.
Which sadly had actually nothing to do with Gary's actual campaign setting, which is always a bummer. But they started writing articles and fanzines as a nice, thinly veiled marketing campaign. And Gen Con 1974, according to some attendees, was very Dungeons and Dragons heavy, with dozens of games going on at any time and new games starting as soon as one would finish, which more than likely had an impact as sales for D&D increased quite a bit in that latter half of 1974.
Cool.
They did have other games. I'm focusing on D&D. Jody, you want to talk about things you can, but I'm not going to stress about the others other than to say with all their things all totaled in that first year, they didn't quite make a profit, but at least it looked like they could continue going.
That's good.
Yep. And other than that, two more notes for 1974. Gary and Don Kay and Brian Bloom, as well as Gary's family, would spend hours putting those original sets together. And they needed to put it all together because the boxes came unassembled.
Okay.
Other than that, because this is what I do for context. Woo!
Ooh, context.
Yeah. If you complain about a $50 booklet or a D&D supplement, of course, keep in mind this $10 was for the three booklets to kind of get everything. And now it'd be 50 for the player's handbook and 50 for the DM's guide and 50 for the monster manual.
Okay.
I just want to point out that $10 in 1974, inflation adjusted, would be $66 in October 2023 when it's putting these notes together. So it was pricey.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, would you say it was 10 bucks?
$10 for somebody to buy it.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Back in 1974, that was a lot of money.
So, yeah, it's really kind of comparable to what you have to pay now, more or less. Because, you know, those three supplements weren't huge. You know, when you buy a player's handbook now for $50, it's 200 times bigger than the Men of Magic.
The Men of Magic was only like 40 pages.
Yeah. So it's...
So in my PDFs, I actually do have one that is Dungeons and Dragons White Box, and it actually does have the original artwork for the covers. So
nice.
I've got the individual books, and then I've got all three books in one PDF with the original covers. And that one is 147 pages. So less than what the player's handbook is page-wise today.
Yeah. So stop complaining about $50. I get it. $50 is not cheap right now, especially if you're a junior high or high school or, you know, poor college student or whatever. You know, it's not cheap, but it's...
That's if you want the hard copy, though. I mean, a lot of people are buying PDFs now. So
that's true. Yeah, it's cheaper. But that's what 1974 is about to say, hey, Jody, let's do 75. And I would like to tonight, but I'd like to do it as a different episode because 1975 is a little longer.
Okay, we can do that.
1974, true 50th anniversary. Woo!
Yay!
By the way, if you want to run an original thing with these supplements and then these rules, you can. I love DMing the Red Box Basic Beckme Blue Box Expert thing. I would have enjoyed this if this was the only version out there, but I'm glad it's not the one I started with.
Yeah, I've not really looked at these rules to see how they compare to what it is now, or even compared to, you know, what past editions that we've played. So
it's not much different than first edition, but first edition did make it a little nicer, put it together.
Yeah. And apparently it is now referred to as OD&D for Original Dungeons and Dragons.
That's better than OG D&D. I'm going to keep calling it the white box because I'm old and grouchy.
Well, I think that's what most people call it, is the white box.
Always have those cock knockers who want to be try to cool. Oh, do you mean OD&D? No, I mean white box, dick. And I don't even give a shit if you were there in 1974. You can still suck my ass. But 1974, not much happened. They put it out, took a lot of time putting it together, didn't quite make a profit, but they could see a light coming if they kept going.
Yeah.
And it's weird, but the actual year of the 50th anniversary is maybe one of the smallest amounts of notes because building up to it is a huge, huge thing. That first year can be disappointing because you're trying to sell it, but then it gets bigger later years.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just looked some stuff up on Wikipedia that I can add to this. If you don't mind, real quick, this won't take long.
No, I don't care. I tried to streamline some of the things because, again, I think I told you I have 32 pages of notes. That was after I streamlined it twice. I started with like 60 some. So no. If you've got some interesting things to put in, by all means.
So this is some reviews from, let's see, what was this? The Space Gamer was a magazine dedicated to science fiction and fantasy board games and eventually tabletop role-playing games because this is the first one. But in issue number two of the Space Gamer, from 1975, I don't know what month.
Oh, well, it's 1975. You got to wait till 75 now.
Do you want me to?
No, you keep going. I'm just being a dick.
Okay. So a guy named Tim Waddell reviewed Dungeons and Dragons, said that it was the most said that the most stimulating part of the game is the fact that anything can happen. Nothing is impossible. And another guy, Andy Padua, also reviewed it in that same issue. He said that as a game, D&D is a fantastical outlet for the imagination. It has the quality of being infinitely flexible, and with it comes the reality of impossibility. There are drawbacks to the game, however, as there are in any game. D&D cannot even begin to get interesting in less than 20 hours playing time.
You know, I can't say I agree because I think you can get it much more interesting pretty quick if you do it right.
Yeah.
But I also can't disagree.
Well, okay, so but here's what he goes on to say about that. And I know you're going to agree on this. Hundreds of hours of work must be done ahead of time by the referee, and it takes a fairly long time to prepare on the part of the players. So, maybe in 1974 when this first came out, yes. But I think, by now, the resources available to both players and dungeon masters streamlines that a little bit. So it's not hundreds of hours, but you're still putting in a lot of hours.
Yeah, even if you get a pre-made module, the DM has to go through it and be prepped for it.
Yeah. Let's see.
And hell, making a character. I love how Sam and Jenny were like, hey, James, if you want to just kind of make us our characters.
Yeah.
It is, because once you get the character, as long as it's a class and race you like, do you make it your own character?
Gary Gygax won the Strategist Club's Outstanding Designer and Writer for the creation of Dungeons and Dragons. And it also, the White Box set also won the H.G. Wells Award.
Nice. I'm not going to get into it because that's one of the things I took out. But Avalon, no, not that. It's something else. I think I will mention Origins Convention here soon. But
Yeah, there's I see something for 1977 on Origins, so
they started winning some awards and it was irritating people. So Origins made an award that was a little different in such a way that D&D couldn't win it. Yeah, but I took it out. It's not, it's kind of a thing that I wasn't going to stress about. But no, what you're saying is
yeah.
cool.
In December of 2016, a first printing of the box set was sold on eBay for over $20,000.
I could see that. If I had money to blow on that, I would love an actual one, but that's like independently wealthy money or your dumbass money.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I'm gonna add to it.
Cool. No, that was good. It's 1974.
There you go.
Right. So, but yeah, we'll be back in 1974. So, 50th anniversary, of course, is 1974. We just finished.
Yes.
And Jody might have different things, but I know I had up through 1976 because D&D changes a little bit in 1977.
I don't really have a lot of notes, so I'll just kind of jump in where I remember things.
Yeah, coming up, just so you know, in this arc, I got notes ready for, so we'll do them this year's 77, 76, a little bit of the Gygax Arneson hullabaloo, a little bit of Tolkien, and yeah. That's what we'll have for this bit. And next one will be 1975.
Woohoo!
But for 1974, I am good if you're good.
I'm good.
Won't get into Sheldon's favorite number, which would have happened in one of these episodes.
Uh-huh.
Until next time, I am Fighting Man James.
I'm Jody.
He's the cleric of evil. You mean an evil god? No, just evil. And we will D&D at you later.
Bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
Ah! No, it's flying all over the place. I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm good.
Okay.
Oh, I did get to 1973. That's right.
You did.
Wait a second. Why am I on 1974? Did we really finish 73?
We did.
That's right. It's a small episode. It's only a few pages long.